Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Hey there, Crispy. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Good. I have some listener mail.
All right, then.
This listener mail comes from Jay, and Jay says, "Hey, guys, I was listening to the USB versus FireWire episode and thought of a great podcast idea." We'll be the judge of that, Jay. "You guys should cover the data transfer rates, megabits, storage capacity, gigabytes, and processor speeds, gigahertz, and naturally all the other variations of those instances. I'm pretty computer savvy, and even I couldn't tell you the differences on the fly, only that bigger is better. I'm sure lots of listeners would appreciate this info. Keep up the great work, Jay." Thanks, Jay. We're calling this episode Mega, Mega, Mega for short, but it's actually megabits, megabytes, and megahertz.
All right.
Just because it was easy to do that terminology.
Then it sounds more fun.
Yeah. It sounds kind of like, you know, the monster truck rallies.
Oh, yeah.
Mega, mega, mega. So let's start off by talking about bits.
Yeah. So shall we? I thought that was a good place to start.
Yes. At the beginning?
Yeah.
And to start at the very beginning, a very good place to start.
So a bit.
Yes.
Is a very, very tiny chunk of information.
Yes, it's a binary digit.
Yes, that's what bit is short for. And basically, it is a one or zero, yes, or the memory space used to store that one or zero.
Right.
You can think of it sort of like a, if you will, a digital atom. It's basically the smallest. I mean, there are pieces that are actually technically smaller, I think, than a bit, but...
Just like there are pieces that are smaller than an atom. But I think atom is a basic building block for information.
Yes, exactly.
And you can also think of them kind of as a switch, as either being on or off or A or B or whatever two
things. One or zero.
One or zero. That would be one or zero.
Right.
That's the on or off. And
binary.
And so 8 of these bits packaged together have a special name.
Steve.
No.
Oh.
That's the guy who runs Apple.
Yeah, you're right.
No, it's byte. B-Y-T-E.
I thought that was a magazine.
Make up a byte. So depending on who you talk to, you can find out different reasons for why 8 bits are a byte. But in general, it represents the maximum amount of information that early computers could send at one time.
Yeah, it's really the smallest amount of information that is readable.
Yeah.
I mean, a bit is readable, but not a byte actually says something. Like it might say a letter or
it could create a character. Exactly.
Yeah. So that's, it's big enough to, have a range of values and you can use it for, to represent different things.
Okay. So 8 bits equals 1 byte. We got that, right?
Uh-huh.
All right. So let's move on. Let's say that you have a kilobyte. Uh-huh. Now, the prefix kilo usually means what?
1,000.
Right. So a kilobyte must be 1,000 bytes, right?
Not exactly.
Shut your mouth, Crispy.
Yeah, I'd like to take 8 seconds here, maybe a byte worth of seconds.
Sure.
And point out that this is not very metric. If you're looking for nice even tens, you're not going to get it here.
It's because the entire world of computer information really is based off of a concept of twos, as in 0 and 1. So you've got, this whole binary mindset. Same sort of thing here. A kilobyte actually represents 2 to the 10th power number of bytes, which does not equal 1,000. It equals 1,024. But because 1,024 is awfully close to 1,000, computer engineers said, hey, why don't we just call it kilo? That's what this number of bytes represents. It's a kilobyte. It's 1,024 bytes. Cause that makes sense because computer engineers are sadists.
There are other people who don't agree with that.
Right.
Should I take this opportunity to do my verbal sidebar on
this? Please do.
They call them kibibytes. K-I-B-I bytes.
Instead of kilobytes because kilo is misleading?
Yes.
Is that the reason?
Yes.
I had not heard of the kibibyte faction.
Yes. They're it goes all the way up.
Do they do mibby bytes and
tibby bytes and gibby bytes? And yes.
I'm having trouble processing this information.
Perhaps you need a faster processor. So let's get back on.
Okay. So a kilobyte is 1,024 bytes. So a megabyte would be 1,024 kilobytes.
Right. Technically 1,048,576 bytes.
Oh, wow. Awesome. yes. So how many bits would that be? Did you work that out?
No.
Ha ha. 8,388,608 bits. Suck it, Paulette. remember, if you have anything that's in byte form, you have to multiply it by 8 in order to find out how many bits there are. That'll become important in a little bit. So
a little bit.
A little bit.
Okay.
So a gigabyte. A gigabyte would be 1,024 megabytes or I'm not even going to go there. I was going to try and say how many bytes it is, but it's a lot. It's a lot of bytes.
Yep.
It's over 1 billion, obviously, because it would have to be since you're talking about 1,024 times 1,024 times 1,024.
Yeah.
So that's where if you're talking about bytes, that's the numbers we're chatting about. That it gets really confusing if you're talking about, I have 120 megabyte hard drive. Does that mean it has 120 million bytes? No, it doesn't, because you have to multiply that 1,024 in there.
Plus, hard drives are never exactly the same size as is advertised on the box.
Right, that's also another element, is that you'll get a capacity that's listed on the box, but in reality, you're never going to have that exact amount of space available. You could not actually pack as many bytes into it as it says you can.
Yeah. I love it when you open the box that says 500 gigabyte hard drive and you put, attach it to your computer and it says, yes, it's 496 gigabytes. And you go, okay, where's my other 4 gigs?
Hello. Yeah.
Want it back.
I guess it must have fallen out in the box in shipping or something. I don't know. Yeah.
There's a hole in the hard drive and they escaped.
All my bytes are leaking out. Damn it. Oh, there goes that screenplay. So, So now let's go on over to bit megabits, as in what you had a little more about bytes.
I had a little bit more.
Go ahead.
A lot bit more, if you will.
Yes. All right. Go ahead.
You know, actually, you go past gigabytes.
Yes, that's true. Yes, you can go further.
Just because it's cool and you never hear about it, but it's the kind of thing that you will hear about because
and
500 gigabyte hard
now.
Drive is nothing now. You can get a terabyte hard drive for a reasonable price now.
Right. Our producer Tyler was just talking about that's the only kind of drive he'll buy because, you know, screw those smaller drives.
He's snooty.
He is snooty. We love you, Tyler. He's snorting at us right now, in fact, in a snooty way.
He's going to spit in our audio now.
Yeah. Why do you sound like chipmunks?
Totally threw me off.
So
terabyte is the next byte, or tibibyte, if you will.
Yes.
It's the next step up from gigabytes.
So that's 1,024 gigabytes.
Yes. But, you know, this is where they start to become vague because people just don't talk about these things.
Next peta?
Petabytes, yes. Or petabytes or pibibytes.
Right.
And then.
You lost me.
Yottabytes.
Yotta, that's right. Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. Y-O-T-T-A bytes.
Yes.
And if you really want to know, yottabytes are 2 to the 80th power bytes or 1,000,000,000,000,000,000 megabytes, which is, in my terms, a lot.
Yeah.
My wife picks on me because she asked me what kind of dog we just saw, and I go, yeah, it's medium.
Right.
So, you know, in my terms, that is a lot. That's a lot of bytes.
Okay. So that's
what I have for bytes.
That covers the bytes. So when we're talking about bytes, we're really talking about, you know, either storage space or file size, that kind of thing. We're talking about, you know, space.
Mm-hmm.
So
it is the final frontier. After
if we're
all.
Talking about megabits or even gigabits or whatever, you're talking more about transfer speed, data transfer speed.
Yes.
So, let's say that you have an internet connection and it's a 5 megabit per second connection.
Okay.
So that means you can get in 1 second, you can transfer 5 megabits worth of information. Now, this is megabits, not megabytes.
So it's 1,024 bits.
No.
No?
No. Megabits, it's 5 megabits would be 5 million bits.
5 million bits?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can't believe I had that so terribly, terribly wrong.
A kilobit, 5 kilobits would be 5,000 bits.
Okay.
But you don't do the 24, the 1,024. You're not talking about bytes. You're just talking about bits. So now the mega means what it normally means.
See, I was trying to go metric there.
That's the thing is that it gets confusing.
It doesn't apply.
Because megabyte, you have to multiply the 1,024 times the kilobytes. But megabit is totally different. So 5 million. That means you could do 5 million bits in a second. And then you start to think, okay, well, what does this mean in practical terms? Like if I wanted to download a large file, how long would it take me using that speed? And of course, we're just using 5 megabits as an example. That's not too uncommon, I guess, in cable connections.
In cable connections, no, but
assuming that you are getting the advertised download speed, which very much like hard drive capacity is very rarely what they claim it to be.
Yes.
But let's say you're getting a 5 megabits down connection. So you're able to download at 5 megabits per second.
Right.
And let's say that you want to download a file that's 120 megabytes in size. Now, how would you figure out how long that's going to take you to download besides the fact of just hitting download and watching?
Because that's how I do it.
Yeah, that's how any normal human
being
would do it.
5 minutes, 24 seconds.
That's how any
23, 26, 7 minutes. So wait, why is it going up?
Moving on. Let me get this back under control. Pi.
What does pi have to do with it? Do you multiply that by the radius of the bandwidth?
Yes, exactly. So 120 megabytes. First, you have to figure out, all right, well, how many bytes is 120 megabytes?
Right.
So remember, a megabyte is 1,048,576 bytes.
Okay.
So you multiply that by 120, and you come up with 125,829,120 bytes. Now you need to figure out how many bits that is. So how many bits to a byte?
8.
So that means you have to multiply 125,829,120 bytes times 8. Which comes out to 1,006,632,960 bits. Okay, so you have a 5 megabit per second connection. That means you download at 5 million bits per second. So you divide the 1,006,632,960 632,960 bits by 5 million, and you come up with 201.3 with some other numbers that I dropped off. That's how many seconds it takes to download a 120 megabyte file with a 5 megabit per second connection. 201 seconds, or 3.36 minutes, so just under 3.5 minutes.
Your mileage may vary. Some restrictions apply.
But that's if you ever wanted to figure it out, that's how you do it. Now, if it's a gigabyte, well, that just means you got to multiply by bigger numbers.
Going to need a bigger calculator.
Yeah. So remember, megabytes, we're talking about file sizes, hard drive space, we're talking about space. Megabits, we're talking about speed. So megahertz, it's speed, but of a different variety.
Yep.
And again, megahertz, that's just the term we picked. But I mean, processors now are out in the gigahertz range. So we're really, megahertz is a throwback to old school, really, at this point.
Yeah. Well, it depends on what you're talking about.
Right. I guess it does. Yeah.
Because there are some processors in, you know, all kinds of things.
That's true.
Actually, there are processors in virtually everything now.
That's true.
And but some of them don't require gigahertz.
In your average computer that you would purchase today, we're talking about the gigahertz.
Oh, yeah. Easily.
So now we're talking about cycles.
Okay.
All right. So a computer.
Clock cycles.
Yes. Clock cycles. Clock ticks or clock cycles. Now, this can be a little tricky to get your mind around if you're not familiar with the way computers work. But a cycle is is the basic unit of computational time.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And it's essentially how much time it takes to perform a single instruction. And you can have multiple cycles per second. So it's really talking about how long it takes you to do a certain task to perform a very basic instruction. It doesn't, and so it's variable. A cycle is not like, you can't say a cycle is 1/1000th of a second or something like that, because depending on the speed of your processor, you can fit in more in the same amount of time. Mm-hmm. So it's a variable time thing.
Plus, you can also fool your computer into doing more.
You can overclock, but we'll get into that. So we're talking about hertz. Hertz is the cycle per second. So one hertz would be one cycle per second, which would be a monumentally slow computer. If you're talking about megahertz, you're talking about millions of cycles per second.
Right.
So your processor is able to perform millions of sets of instructions per second that passes. Some commands require several cycles to complete. It's not necessarily one command per cycle. That's not the way it necessarily breaks out. But in general, the more megahertz or gigahertz your processor has, the more information it can process within a second.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's only half of the equation. Because if your computer processor is able to handle all these instructions, that's great, but it also has to pull data to perform instructions upon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in that case, it needs to have a pretty wide, essentially like a data avenue. It's got to be able to pull in as enough data. Because the way I think of it is that imagine that you are capable of, say, wrapping a box. You could do maybe 5 a minute, let's say.
Okay.
All right. So you're standing at a conveyor belt.
That would be a very fast wrapper.
Yes.
Seriously. Okay.
But it's a little box.
Okay.
All you're doing is twisting a little thing. You can do 5 a minute.
Okay. I got it.
But the conveyor belt that you're working on is only spitting out boxes like, you know, 1 a minute. So you're able to do 5 a minute, but you're only getting one box.
Right.
So you've got all this power that's going to waste.
Right.
Same thing would happen if you had a processor that had a monumentally high gigahertz capacity, but you didn't have a very wide avenue for data to get in. It would be able to perform lots and lots of instructions, but it wouldn't have enough information to really be a great processor.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to have that second half in there, which is really going back to the whole megabits, gigabits thing.
Mm-hmm.
How much data can you pull through, transfer into the processor so that you can run these instructions that it's capable of doing? So when we're talking about the megahertz or gigahertz or whatever, we're talking about the speed at which your microprocessor can perform calculations.
Right.
And the microprocessor could be a CPU. It could be a graphics processing unit. There are a lot of different things. And, of course, it doesn't even have to be in a computer, as you were pointing out.
True. And then there's another measurement of computing power.
What would that be?
I just thought of, and I looked up to make sure I could actually talk about it.
Okay.
Flops.
Ah, yes.
Which is short for floating point operations.
Also, it describes some actors I know.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Which would explain the flop sweat.
Mm-hmm. But what's a floating point operation?
A floating point operation is basically a mathematical calculation and operation.
Gotcha.
That a processor can run. And, you know, you hear people talk in this, they're using the same prefixes, mega, giga, tera, peta.
Sure.
Basically a megaflop is, according to whatis.com, 1,000,000 floating point operations per second. So that's, you know, a fair number of operations,
yeah,
certainly more than I can do per second.
It's definitely tiny compared to, what you see supercomputers capable of doing, since those are all in the peta or higher range. We're talking about operations, you know, really complex operations that are designed for things like CERN's, mm-hmm. Large Hadron Collider. If it ever goes online, it's going to need those kind of computers to process the data that comes out of those experiments.
Yeah, because those can churn out quite a bit of information in a very short time.
Right. But if you need it to, you know, you don't need necessarily a computer that has that capability if you want to run Doom.
Right.
Because I can run Doom on my Android phone. I'm pretty sure it doesn't have the petaflop ability.
You. Not at all.
Well, I think that's a good roundup of bits, bytes, hurts. I mean, I hurt. All my bits and bytes are hurting right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, hopefully that clears that up for anyone who was unfamiliar with those terms or
including me, apparently.
Well, there are points where, I mean, I fall victim to it all the time when I'm thinking, 5 megabits per second. That means it's going to take me blah, blah, blah to download this file. And then I remember, oh, wait, no, that's bits, not bytes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have to I forgot to multiply by 8. And then, of course, if you forget the whole 1024 thing, that means that you're not really thinking accurately about the size of a file. And it just gets really kind of complicated if you are not of the computer science world.
Right.
And since I'm of the liberal arts world, yeah, I get confused pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But I guess, do you have anything to add?
I don't.
Well, then I suppose that brings us to a listener mail. And this listener mail comes from Josh. Hey guys, I was just wondering if Linux has a vulnerability to viruses. I know that one of the reasons Mac is mostly virus-free is because there is a much smaller population, relatively speaking, of Mac OS users. Does this mean that Linux users also do not need to fear viral attacks? From a loyal listener, Josh. Josh, we're talking about the whole security through obscurity concept here. About,
yeah.
You know, if not a lot of people are using it, then there's not a big target, and therefore it's not worth writing any kind of malicious software for people who use that, just because you're not going to hit that many people. No, Linux is not automatically immune to viruses. In fact, the day that we're recording this podcast, there was a critical vulnerability found in the Linux kernel dating back several years, which has since been patched. But that's the thing, is that any kind of software, there are chances for vulnerabilities to exist. And if a vulnerability exists, you can bet someone out there is trying to figure out a way to exploit it. Now, does this mean that Linux users are likely to encounter a virus? Probably not, but that doesn't mean that they can just assume that they are, you know, untouchable.
Yeah, it's I booted up my Linux system yesterday, and it was offering me some patches for critical updates. So you can bet that the Linux community is already on top of it. You know, as soon as they figure out that there's something going on, the thing is, security through obscurity, there are so many fewer people using the Linux operating system than there are Windows that, you know, people are, it's sort of like other criminals. I mean, somebody who's looking to mug somebody for their wallet isn't going to hang out, you know, in a place where no one is. They're not going to hang out in the middle of a pasture because, you know, unless they want to mug a cow.
See, this explains why my misspent youth wasn't that misspent.
Exactly. But you were hanging out in a pasture waiting for somebody to come by to rob.
There are a lot of cows who want to have some words with me, though.
Yeah. Okay. Anyhow.
Actually, that's not true. I grew up in chicken country.
Anyway.
What?
Oh, this is great.
What?
But yeah, I mean, it's a case of, I mean, just because you use, you know, any particular operating system or other programs, I mean, there have been some things going on for Adobe Acrobat in the not too distant past,
mm-hmm.
Where, or, you know, some of the web browsers.
Sure.
And those things are cross-platform vulnerabilities. So, you know, you just need to make sure that you keep everything patched up and, you know, an eye on what's going on just to make sure that you are, you know, keeping yourself safe. And it's always good to practice, safe interneting skills.
Sure.
You know, watching where you're getting, watching with which links you click on and, you know, keeping an eye out for phishing. You know, phishing doesn't require an operating system.
That's true.
And that is certainly a vulnerability. So.
Yep. Well, thanks a lot for writing in, Josh. Hope that answered your question. If any of you have any questions you'd like to ask us, you can write us. Our email address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. And, of course, we've got tons of articles on the site all about computers and processing and all that sort of fun stuff. That's at howstuffworks.com. Crispy and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new TechStuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.